Okay, today I'm in Leeds at HQ of Skybet talking to Richard Flint, CEO. Thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us today, Richard.
Pleasure.
Now, you were voted the number one CEO by Glassdoor.co.uk, and it was announced by Skybet that Flinty won it. Now, is that sort of informality and relaxed atmosphere something you've encouraged, and is it a key to your success at running Skybet?
Yeah, I think I've encouraged that informal culture in the company. I don't have an office. None of the senior people have an office. Most of us don't have permanent desks. I think it's really important in a digital technology driven company that, because a lot of the innovation comes from bottom up in the company. I think if you have hierarchy between the people that do the innovation, that come up with ideas, the people that are dealing with customers, if you have levels of hierarchy between that and the senior people, then I don't think those innovations get surfaced very quickly and easily. So really focused on having an informal, non-hierarchical culture where everyone feels like they can, you know, get their ideas surfaced and ultimately get those out to customers. So yeah, it's been good. I'm really, you know, proud of the culture we've got here, and it has been a big part of our success.
Okay, the bookmaking industry has changed massively in the last 20 years or so. You were product director of Flutter.com back in the early 2000s. For those too young to remember, Flutter was the embryonic exchange that predated Betfair. Did you have any idea at the time that the betting exchanges would have such a seismic impact on the bookmaking industry?
Yeah, it was a long time ago that, and probably like many startups, you think, we were young, we were entrepreneurial, we weren't really from the betting industry. We probably did think that what we were doing would change the face of the betting industry. It's sort of the overconfidence of youth and lack of knowledge. So I think, if you asked us back then, do you think it's going to change the way people bet? I think we'd have very confidently said yes, maybe a bit foolishly, but it's partly turned out to be true.
So you left, in hindsight, should you have stuck with the exchanges?
I can't complain about how things have turned out, to be honest, but, for me personally. And I think actually exchanges have become, as you say, they have changed a lot of the betting industry, but right now they've, become part of the mix and how some people bet, but not the way most people bet. So if anything, I think the sort of, the going back into fixed odds, but learning what we learnt in exchanges and, building on what they've done, and using the vast range of options that we can give to customers through online, using that through Skybet's been a big part of our success, so I've got no regrets.
Okay, you say that you didn't come from a sort of bookmaking background, so what, do you have a personal history at all in gambling?
You mean, do I bet a lot myself?
Well, were you interested as a youth or...?
I was interested, but not, you meet plenty of people in the industry that have, perhaps come from a family where dad bets, granddad bets, and, they're really into racing and they wanted to work, either in the betting industry or as a punter or, in horse racing. That's been their desire all their lives. That wasn't really me. I came to the industry at the height of the sort of dot-com boom with Flutter in 2000. I've absolutely loved the time in the industry and I absolutely love the industry and, love all the history and the characters. I love the connection with sport. I love the technology side of things. But it wouldn't be true to say that I'm a sort of a, I guess, an executive, businessman, whatever you want to call it, first. And it's been the betting industry that I've done that in rather than the other way around. You meet a lot of people that, go up through betting shops and then become executives after that. That's not the case for me.
Okay, so you partially answered my next question. So you consider yourself a top CEO whose skill could be transferred to numerous businesses first rather than a bookmaker?
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a top CEO, but I think I'm a businessman, executive first, and I would, could have perhaps done that in other industries, but I'm really pleased that I've ended up in this industry and I've loved my time in it.
Skybet has been very proactive recently with, sort of looking onto problem gambling, etc. Do you feel that the gambling industry is a little tug of war with your conscience personally?
It's a good question and well put question. I think that there are moral issues in many industries, but probably they are higher in the gambling industry than they are in some other industries. And I do think that there are moral issues and issues of conscience that we face every day and that I face every day. And I think it's important that as an industry and as a person and as, you know, people in the industry, we engage with those moral issues and engage with what our conscience might be telling us, and you know, and work through that and have a view on all sorts of moral aspects of the industry and of the company's operations. So yeah, there's a sort of profit making aspect to any job, including mine, and there are shareholders to think about, but there's also a doing the right thing element to it that you know, may lead to lower profits in the short term, but you know, probably in the longer term. I firmly believe in the longer term that doing the right thing, as your conscience tells you, and you know, according to your morality, and is in the best interests of the business and shareholders in the long run.
Okay, there's been a lot of talk recently about bookmaker advertising, you know, high up in government, etc. Do you think that despite being illegal and popular adult pastime and a legitimate business, bookmaker advertising is unfairly criticised?
I think it's not surprising that it's criticised. I think if, you know, there's a lot of it, and whereas, as you know, I've been quoted as saying this, I don't think a outright ban is right. I probably don't think a pre-watershed ban is right unless we can't find a better alternative. I do think that there's too much volume and the tone needs to be addressed. So I think that criticism is not surprising. You know, I know that it's a little bit dangerous to draw analogies with other industries, but I'll do it anyway in this case. I think if alcohol was so heavily advertised during live football, and if you know, so many football teams had relationships with alcohol companies, and if there were stories in the media about young people and footballers, you know, becoming alcoholics, then I think there would be an examination of that level of advertising, and I think it's not a surprise that that's happened in the gambling industry as well.
Okay, so how would you defend accusations that prolific advertising and football sponsorship by firms like Sky Bet are targeting and grooming those currently underage?
I think it's absolutely wrong that we target people underage. We do everything we can not to target those people. If we, you know, partly for those moral reasons I talked about earlier on, but partly also for business reasons. You know, I think there are many fair criticisms of the industry, but I think that the online betting industry, companies like us, are very good at keeping out people who are under 18. It's pretty hard for people to bet who are under 18 with an online bookmaker. And if, you know, to do so, you're going to need to have a credit card or an account which is available to over 18s. You have to lie about your age. You have to get through various age verification processes that we have in place. So under 18s can't bet with us. We do our best to stop them betting with us. And advertising that gets to under 18s is essentially wasted. So, you know, I don't think any of us in the industry are deliberately targeting advertising at under 18s.
Yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of if you've got your logo on a team shirt and a sort of 14-year-old knows who Sky Bet are, they're a ready-made customer when they make 18. That's more along the lines I was thinking of as in grooming, rather than to try and encourage underage people to actually bet at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's not our focus for people under 18. We'd rather, if there's a way of sort of excluding all the advertising so people couldn't see it until they were 18, that's what we would do. You know, and it is, people talk about under 18 people knowing the names of betting companies. But my kids, you know, knew the names of betting companies because they used to walk past the betting shop every day on the way to school. And you know, plenty of people know the names of alcohol companies and car companies. I think what is important is that we do make it so that only over 18s can bet. And I think what we need to do a lot more of as an industry is educate people through schools, like we have education on other mental health, on mental health questions, and on things like alcohol and drugs. I think people need to be educated about gambling, about the fact that, you know, you are, except with the rare exception of some of the professional punters that I know that you have contact with, but you will lose your money if you're betting. You know, you're not going to make money in the long term betting. People need to be aware about that. And there needs to be more education, which is one of the reasons why we're working with YGAM and working with Epic to educate both people in schools and young footballers and academy players.
Okay, you sort of answered my next question as well, but I will ask it. So, but you've, bookmaking industry then should really have more of a moral obligation to protect their customers, given that the ultimate aim of the business is to relieve people of their money for no product.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of industries, people spend a lot of, you know, firms are based on people spending money and not getting anything physical back. So I don't think it's particularly unusual in that case. But I do think that we have a moral obligation to educate people to, the thing about online businesses, you've got a lot of data on your customers. And obviously, what we haven't done as much as we should do, we haven't done as much in the past as we should do, is use that data to spot people that are gambling with a, you know, spending a lot of time gambling or gambling beyond their means, and actually engaging with that person to highlight that to them and, you know, in extreme cases, stop them from betting or at least have them put limits on their account. And that's the sort of thing we need to be doing much more actively. And as a company, we're doing that much more actively than we used to do. But I think that's something that has to happen industry-wide.
I mean, obviously the good intentions are there, but is it really possible for bookmakers to stop recreational punters becoming problem gamblers?
I mean, the reasons why someone becomes a problem gambler are very complex and very personal. It can be, you know, there are many people that are more expert on this than I am, but seeing what I see, talking to problem gamblers, talking to people around the industry, it's often a lot to do with personal circumstances, maybe things that happened in the past, maybe a certain situation. But what, you know, we as a company can either, and as an industry, you can either steer people in, you can be responsible for steering people down a bad path where the problems are worse, or steering people down, or helping to steer people down a better path. And I think in the past, the industry has done too much of the former, and we need to do more of the latter. You know, we need to be more of the solution to problem gamblers, try and help people rather than being part of the problem, you know, driving people more and more into problem gambling. And that's, I think, the real sea change that is starting to happen. I feel that we've made good strides on that as a company, but we need to do more, and the whole industry needs to do significantly more.
Okay, I think it's pretty well accepted there's a very small percentage of people that use any bookmaking firm that become a problem gambler. Do you feel that ultimately, like with drinking and et cetera, that the responsibility lies with the adult ultimately to make that decision?
I think if you put it exactly like that, if I was to just agree with that statement as you said it there, I think that would imply that I don't think the gambling industry has a responsibility. And as I've said earlier on, I think the gambling industry does have a responsibility to help steer people down the right path rather than, you know, the path that's very damaging to them. Ultimately, you know, the only way someone is going to get out of their addiction, I mean, I've not had any close friends that have been gambling addicts, but I've had close friends that have been addicted to in other ways. And I've, you know, had friends that have been down the 12-step program, which is, you know, primarily, for my friends anyway, it was to do with alcohol. And, you know, taking responsibility is a key part of the journey to getting out of that addiction. And I don't see the industry, however it's regulated and however it behaves, can completely solve the problem for an individual. It has to be them taking the choice and them taking responsibility for the addiction. So I think it is a lot to do with personal responsibility, but I think the industry does need to behave responsibly and, as I say, to guide people down, to be helpful for people rather than damaging for people in their journey out of addiction.
Okay, Richard, you said in the past that a very big proportion of your customers were under 25 and used mobile phones to bet. Added to that, they were more likely to bet on football than horse racing. You know, what sort of figures have you got to that? Any idea?
As you said, I don't want to give too many figures out today. We have done a bit in the past, but it's the minority of customers, of course, that are under 25, but it is a reasonable number. And most of our customers use mobile phones. I think 80 to 90% of our sports betting is on mobile. And football is bigger than racing, but you know, the actual racing scene, we've seen good growth in racing in the last couple of years. I think we sort of started as a firm focused primarily on football, but racing has we've got greater share of racing now than we did in the past.
Okay, you said we don't want to mention figures. The figures that I've got, a very small proportion, alarmingly, from people into racing, of under 25's favourite sport was horse racing, compared to a fair big percentage and over 55's. Do you think that can change?
I think racing does have a challenge in appealing to a younger audience. I think the ITV racing have done a great job. Ed and Ollie and Francesco and the rest of the team have, I think, cut through to a younger audience. I think so. I think there's some signs of progress there. I also think, not being a racing traditionalist, actually getting people to racing, whether they are going there for the music or for the social aspect or for the racing itself, I think starts people engaging with racing itself. I think point I made back in the Jim Crack speech a couple of years ago now was that racing is a very expensive product for bookmakers to offer. You've got the levy, you've got streaming costs, margins are pretty tight on racing. So I think the racing industry needs to be careful about how much of the betting revenue it takes, because if you want bookmakers to be incentivized to promote racing rather than the opposite, where they're promoting other things. I think in the past, perhaps the racing industry thought, well, what bookmakers do is acquire customers through racing and then cross-sell them into other products, be they gaming products or football or tennis or other things. For us, it's actually the opposite. We acquire most of our customers, the vast majority of our customers, first engage with us on football, and then we try and cross-sell them into racing because it's a more regular activity. It's important that the racing industry isn't too greedy to the point where we're just not incentivized to do that. We need to work together with racing. I guess it's not quite the question you asked, but given that I'm on a roll now, I think in the past the relationship, the traditional relationship between bookmaker industry and racing has been very antagonistic and oppositional, and we don't want to work that way. We see ourselves as quite closely aligned to racing. We want to grow racing. But we need them to work with us on that, which in many cases they do.
So do you think that horse racing does a competent job of promoting itself and attracting new blood, or does it rely on bookmakers to do its job for them and then ultimately the bookmakers take the flak?
I think together we need to do more. And I think I talked about the incentives, but I think also, things like... I'm not from a racing background, but I've been in the industry now for 20 years, and there's still quite a lot of aspects of racing that I don't understand. So simplifying it without dumbing it down, someone new to the sport can understand enough to have an interest and have a bet in it, and then learn more complexity as time goes on. I think it's in bookmakers' interest to do that, and it's in the racing industry's interest to do that. So I think that's the sort of thing we need to work together on: simplifying it, explaining it, scheduling it at the right times. So sometimes scheduling it around football, scheduling it such that it's the important races take place where people can watch them and bet on them on their mobile phone, rather than being focused so much on the betting shops. All that sort of thing is important. As I say, we have a good relationship with racing, but I think there's a lot more we can do, particularly to appeal to a younger audience.
Do you share figures with racing? I mean, do they know that they really do need to grasp the demographic nettle?
Yes, we do. And we would be happy to share more figures.
Now, from a bookmaking angle, you're a massive, massive company worth millions, possibly billions of pounds, but you've been criticised for playing very small, as in the sort of stakes that some punters can get on. Do you think that sort of profit or locking in has embarrassed the bookmaking industry a bit, the traditional bookmaking industry a bit, and upset punters, put them off racing that they can't get on?
I mean, I think it upsets a very small vocal minority. And I can't say unequivocally that every person that we restrict and we've made the right decision on. But, you know, a couple of important points on that. First, we are a mass market company. We focus on small stakes and a lot of customers. We've never claimed to be a firm that takes on big hitters that has a clear position. It's not really where we play. So we've never claimed to be someone that will lay massive bets to shrewd customers. The second thing on that is, you know, we spend a lot of money acquiring customers. Actually restricting them is something that is not a decision we take lightly. You know, we restrict customers if we think that we're going to lose money to them in the long run. You know, we don't feel we're obliged to continue to lay bets to customers we're going to lose to. We don't think that's right. So we will restrict our losses to people who we think will win money from us in the long run. That's the principle behind it. We can't say we get every decision right, but if we think someone is going to lose money over the long run to us, of course we're going to carry on laying them.
Now, one of my recent interviewees, professional punter Dean Valentine, said that he has a special arrangement with some bookies to get on in return for a card mark. Do you have similar punters?
We don't have similar punters to that, but we do. You know, one of the reasons why we restrict not close accounts is because some people who are very well informed will carry on betting smaller stakes than they would like through us, and that information can be used in changing the price. So that's why we restrict not close. But a sort of a card mark arrangement like you've spoken about, I'm not aware that we ever have that sort of relationship.
Okay, and another thing that a lot of bookmakers, especially vocal bookmakers on Twitter, they're obsessed with arbas, convinced that people are earning off of them. I mean, really, what does it matter to you what a backer does? I'll buy records if I want anything. I mean, what does it matter to you what a punter does with their winnings? After all, you've offered the prices.
Well, I think it often, those people, obviously, the state of the market and those people getting on arbs probably indicates that we've got the price wrong. So we adjust the price to that. If you've got a lot of people arbing in the market, that ultimately takes money out of the ecosystem. It's not going back to everyday punters. It's not profit that we make. It's not going into levy. It's bad for the whole ecosystem. So I'm not sure we would be vocal about it on Twitter, but we certainly wouldn't want to take a lot of money from arbers unless we were so super confident in our price that we were happy to lay that price to anyone. But we're humble in how we trade, and if there's arbers on a particular side of a market, then we've probably got the price wrong.
Okay, assuming that somebody has made the decision to price up at a certain price in the first place, how would you sort of think, right, we'll give this 5 or 10 minutes because this guy's a good trader and he knows his onions? Would you sort of stick your neck out a bit, or would you follow the exchanges in?
I mean, these are more questions for our trading team, but my hunch is that they would not be too, we're not the sort of company that would think we know better than the market and stand a position for a long time. That's not really how we build a business.
Okay, some people might be surprised to know that Skybet actually own OddsChecker. Now, A, why is OddsChecker even there if the bookmakers don't like laying the top prices? And, well, basically, ask the question. I mean, yeah. Why would you want to be involved with OddsChecker?
Well, our ownership of OddsChecker goes back a long time. Trying to get the dates right, but I think to 2006 when Sky at that time bought the Sports Internet Group. We run it very separate from everything else, as we don't share specific information. I think if you were a user of the site, you wouldn't know that it was owned by Skybet. You know, we don't promote Skybet more than any other bookmaker. But OddsChecker, there was obviously some concern amongst bookmakers in general about people just taking the top price. But what's quite surprising on OddsChecker is that the majority of people don't actually bet at the top price. They use it as a way of checking that their price is fair or finding a price on a particular outcome, but they probably end up placing their bet where they've got an account or where they've got money in it. So it's not quite as sort of, the usage of OddsChecker is not quite as extreme as people might think.
And do you think maybe that there's still going, sorry to keep going on about the restrictions, but do you think there's a knee-jerk reaction restricting punters, and is there ever a retrospective unrestriction?
There is occasionally a retrospective unrestriction. It's pretty rare. I mean, We use a lot of data analysis to make those decisions. It's based on how someone bets, not whether they win or lose, which is quite important. And you know, if they end up betting when the price comes substantially in after they've placed their bet, that's the basis on which it's done. So it's rare that those decisions are changed, but it has been done.
Richard, in the previous part, I probably over-laboured the point of asking about restrictions, but are there any accounts that have been restricted because they bet on football and they win too much at football?
We talked about restrictions in the earlier section. Just to reiterate, 97% of accounts are unrestricted, and even those that are restricted can still take advantage of, if that's the right word, of our £500, we'll later lose £500 in Group 1, Group 2 races, obviously on racing. On football, there are accounts that have been restricted on football. It's much more of a racing phenomenon, though, because, you know, the sort of information in racing is less widely available. You do get, as you well know, cases of horses that, you know, start in the morning, 20-1, 40-1, you know, go off favourite. That doesn't really happen in football. Well, it's very rare when it happens in football, whereas it happens quite frequently in racing. So those, I think that sort of information asymmetry, for, you know, it's a bit of a fancy term for it, but the fact that, you know, a lot of people out there know a lot about a particular, the chance of a particular horse to win, and they know more about that than the bookmaker, means that it's much more of a racing phenomenon than it is a football phenomenon.
Okay, given that we sort of accept there are very few professional football punters, although we've spoken to a couple, but they tend to be on the Asian handicaps, etc. Are such, you might disagree, draconian restrictions on horse racing backers a way of saying you don't really want too much horse racing business, and because football is much more lucrative?
No, I completely disagree with that. We actively want to grow our racing business. You know, we're sponsoring the Ebor, you know, with £500,000 prize this year and £1 million prize next year. We advertise on ITV Racing. We're spending a lot of money trying to grow our racing business. So absolutely, that's what we want to do. And I know it's a vocal minority, but it's only, you know, 3% of our customer base, which we've got a big customer base. That turns out to be tens of thousands of people, but there's hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people who bet on racing who are unrestricted. So absolutely not. We don't want to lay bets to people we're going to lose money to, but we absolutely want to grow our racing business in the mass market.
So you couldn't see a time in the near future, or in fact the distant future, when your horse racing product has dropped completely?
I can't foresee that. I mean, if the world changes so much that people aren't interested in betting on racing anymore, then, you know, that will be something that's happened for all sorts of reasons and will take a long time. And if that were to ever happen, then that would impact on what we offer, but I can't see any sign of that. And actually, you know, racing is in a better, in the last year or two, racing has shown some decent signs with us, and I think it's in a better state than perhaps the doomsayers, of which, you know, I'm sometimes one, might lead you to believe.
Yeah, you've been very supportive, visually supportive, of the Horse Race Bettors Forum, and appeared in Parliament with them and introduced the Bet to Win a Minimum £500 in support of their campaign. Do you feel that there is actually a need for a body like theirs?
Yes. I mean, we appeared at Parliament in the same session as them. I'm sure they wouldn't like to be described as doing. We weren't with them. We weren't united. We were sort of having a debate about it, about some of these topics. I think that the... I think there's plenty of people in the country that think betting, gambling is wrong, and they've got good reasons for that. But the Horse Race Bettors Forum represents a group of people that are actually, they love betting, they love horse racing. They should be sort of challenging friends, critical friends to bookmakers. Or certainly, you know, they need bookmakers to exist for their pastime and their interest. We need people who bet on horse racing and other sports to exist as a company. So there's, probably to coin a phrase, there's more that unites us. There should be more that unites us than divides us. So I don't think we should be at war with people like the Horse Race Bettors Forum. I also think that they've done an important job in exposing some of the things in the industry that need to change. you know, lots of examples of terms and conditions not being clear, of you know, people not paying out winning bets in time, you know, the protection for consumer funds not being adequate, many, many things that they've already had an impact on, and I would expect that to continue. So all healthy industries need consumer groups to challenge what they do, and I'd hope to have a constructive, if sometimes difficult, debate with them. And they have been, and there will be things that they criticise about us, and we have to accept that they're doing that because they love betting on, they love the sport, and they love betting on it. So we should be engaging with that, and I give them a lot of credit for what they've done.
Okay, so moaning punters that can't get on aside, when they're in the minority, as we all know, if in reality punters have never had it so good, have they?
I think I probably think that's right. If you look at the choice punters have had, and the competitiveness of you know, most betting markets, probably particularly racing, and all the innovation in product and markets, yeah, I think punters probably have never had it so good. I'm sure I'll be shot down for saying that, but that's probably what I believe, yeah.
And just adding the questions about going sort of seven places on big handicaps and things like that, is that a way of getting new customers purely and simply? Or is it something that you think you can, a thing you can actually win on? I know this is just thrown at you now out of the blue.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's not focused at new customers because we make those offers available to all of our customers. It is focused at getting people to, you know, to place a bet on that big race with us rather than with a competition. As various people have pointed out accurately, you know, we will on average lose money on that particular bet on that particular race. But we do it as a way of, you know, getting people to bet with us, that they then bet through the card and, you know, maybe bet on the day afterwards and maybe place a bet on the football as well. So it is it's about keeping customers betting with us, that we expect to make money from those customers over time, even though we anticipate losing money on that particular bet on that particular race.
Okay, just going to your job personally, there's a massive company that you run and you've grown it. What are the main pressures of running such a huge business?
Seems funny to talk for you to say it's a huge business, because it, you know, I've been in, when we first started, we were 50 people in one room in an old electricity generating building in Harrogate, and it still feels a lot like that to me. And I still feel like we're doing the same stuff now as we're doing then, albeit on a bigger scale. So it doesn't really feel like a big company, but anyway, taking the question, what are the pressures and challenges? There's quite a few. The regulatory, the public support for the industry is a big challenge for us and a big focus of mine. So, that can be challenging. We've talked about that earlier on in the discussion. In addition to that, any job where you've got a lot of people with their own particular, you know, aspirations and their own particular desires, their own particular issues, be they workplace issues or personal issues, there's challenges with that. But actually, I love that part of the job, if I'm honest. I love trying to create a culture and a team where we do good work and are successful together. So that's challenging, but I love that part of it. And of course, you know, numbers and competition and keeping market share and keeping shareholders happy is challenging as well.
So things have grown for you. How do you see the future of the bookmaking industry? Are you optimistic?
I think we're going to go through, there's two parts. Internationally, I think that there is a lot of massive potential for the UK betting bookmaking industry. I think we're more advanced on the sort of cycle of regulation and adoption and public questioning than other countries are. I think the learnings that we've taken, you know, of what we've done well and what we haven't done well in the betting industry in the UK will be valuable lessons for overseas expansion. So I'm very optimistic about that side of it for UK companies. I'm optimistic that punters will continue to have, as you put it, never had it so good. I'm optimistic that will continue. I think that there are challenges ahead in the next year, one to 3 years probably, with public support for the industry and actually, you know, fully embracing as an industry and as a company for us, the challenges of public support and being fair and trusted and appreciated, if maybe that's too aspirational, but appreciated by customers and the wider public. I think there's quite a lot to be done there, and that change and the regulation that will come with that will create challenges for us all. But you know, ultimately, once we're through that, you know, I think we're proud of what we do. We're proud of the problem gambling aspects gets a lot of focus, and we talked about it a lot today. But there are, you know, there's a million people betting with us every week, or most weeks. You only need to go on Twitter, or I'm quite often standing at Harrogate Town, my local football club. There's people there who've put their fivefold accumulator on, or and they're talking about what they bet on, whether it's won or lost. There's a lot of positive in that, and that's leaving aside all the involvement of betting and racing and the great sport and the great entertainment that comes from that. You know, there's a lot of, I didn't grow up as a punter, but there's a lot of fantastic aspects to the betting industry, and I think we just need to keep that going and emphasise that, but really focus on getting public support by being moral and listening to the critics and responding to that.
Now, you're one of the largest players on the scene, so obviously I imagine you have a fair bit of impetus. But what changes would you make if you had the sole power to change something in the UK gambling industry today?
I think that having either self-regulation or government regulation on how we work with customers that show signs of problem gambling, and how we engage with those people, actually not just those people, all customers, having appropriate education and interaction and intervention across all customers, from when they first start betting to if people get into difficulties, how we deal with that, getting a consistent framework around that, that's based on the data that we have, that's based on whether people are betting within their means, based on affordability. All that whole aspect of things, I think, we need to have a consistent and responsible way of dealing with accounts from the beginning to the end.
Richard Flint, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Download the Star Sports app from the App Store or Google Play. All of the Star Sports markets, including in-play, all easily accessible from your phone or tablet. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.